Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Okay, welcome back to the Goldmine Podcast, and I'm proud that we have Martin Popoff on our podcast today, and we're going to talk about an online article that Martin has written for goldminemag.com called The Top 20 Deep Purple Songs from the 1970s, ranked, and some might be surprised about which song came in number one. But Martin, introduce yourself. Let's talk about your podcast, your own podcast.
Yeah. So also with Pantheon, I've got History in Five Songs with Martin Popoff. And basically, I come up with a theme every week. I haven't missed a week yet, 195 episodes. And essentially come up with a theme and break things into categories. I got five examples with 30-second music clips and just go through all those themes. So the last one was about paying your dues. And the one before that, I think, was about making bass guitar interesting. And we had, drum intros, drum licks. It was drum sounds. And just the history of certain genres and things like that. So, and you know, I yap really fast for about 30 minutes, and then we put in these clips, so the whole thing comes in at under 35 minutes usually.
It's really cool. Check it out, listeners. So let's talk about this article that you did. You do a lot of lists for us, fun stuff that, you know, music fans will obviously love, especially our readership, who's really, you know, they're like the Jack Black character. Trying to think of that movie about the record store. They're very serious, very dedicated to music. So when you post something like this and they're a Deep Purple fan, obviously they're going to have to debate about what you picked. And you are one of the main voices for, you know, as a Deep Purple expert, if you will. You've written quite a few. How many books have you written on Deep Purple?
On Deep Purple, I guess there's a long time ago, a biography that got split into two. So two separate books, early days and later days. And then I did a timeline with quotes book. Two of those. So that's four. And I think that's it. But we got Rainbow 2 and Sabbath and everybody else related, even a Whitesnake book, actually.
Right. The Deep Purple tree.
Yeah.
Okay. So let's talk about this article. And it got a little bit of controversy. Maybe you can explain. Child in Time was mentioned, and you had some people debate that. Maybe you could explain it a little bit.
Yeah, so that was the big problem with this one. That's where I got the most flack. And I mention it right at the top, even before we get going, kind of thing on it. I've always never really liked Child in Time. I thought it was like a long, boring ballad. I'm not sold on the whole Ian Gillan high screaming and the fact that, you know, the riff is kind of a borrowed riff from Bombay Calling from It's a Beautiful Day. But, you know, everything else on In Rock is like a super good, hard, fast rocker. In fact, it's probably out of the four albums that properly invent heavy metal, it's probably the most impressive of all four of those. So you got two Sabbaths, The Purple, and The First Heap, right? So In Rock is amazing in that respect. But I warn people immediately that Child in Time is not going to be on my list at all, and it's not. And then, you know, we got a flood of people coming in saying that's my favorite Deep Purple song of all time, right? And then I thought I'd get a little pugilistic about it, and I said here's a bananas idea. What if you know, if Child in Time is your favorite Deep Purple song of all time, maybe you don't like Deep Purple very much. And then I added the example of if Motley Crue 1994 with John Corabi singing is your favorite Motley Crue album, maybe you don't like Motley Crue very much. Or if Heart Barracuda is your favorite Heart song, maybe you don't like Hart very much, right? And then that caused hundreds more comments. 75% of the people missed the point completely and didn't want to argue this interesting little intellectual exercise. Rather, they just, you know, came back with, how dare you say I'm not a Deep Purple fan for not liking Child in, you know, for liking Child in Time first, right? But my, you know, my point was that essentially it's a real outlier. It's not what Deep Purple do normally. So, you know, I guess I was tacitly asking people, well, would you rather them have seven or eight Child in Times from that era? Is, you know, would that make you happier? Because you obviously don't like, you know, Ritchie Blackmore riff songs, if it's your favorite song. But, you know, I did eventually say, you know, I know you all love Deep Purple and it just happens to be your favorite. And I know, you know, you'd have 19 other songs on your list and maybe Child in Time would be top five, but maybe not number one. So I'm not saying you're not a Deep Purple fan, but that's all the flack that I got. But I knew immediately I was not going to have Child in Time on my list.
Well, you mentioned three songs that you expected fans to bring up that are not on your list. Women from Tokyo, Strange Kind of Woman, and Child in Time. And Woman from Tokyo is one of my favorites. I was asking that question too. Why not? Why you didn't include that? It seems like it's not up there with Smoke on the Water, but it's a pretty big tune.
Okay, so definitely I have a reason for that too. So both of those songs, they were moderate hits. They were pretty big hits. So that's why, you know, they rise above the level of, you know, scrutiny, right? But I've never liked either of those. I find the verse kind of dull on both of them. Like they're both very similar to me. The verse is dull. The vocal melody is dull. And Strange Kind of Woman, it's the vocal melody follows the riff, which isn't a very good riff. Strange Kind of Woman is just this sort of kind of half bluesy shuffle, sort of heavy song. Woman from Tokyo, same kind of thing. I think the chorus is really lame. Like a lot of Purple fans, you know, they like to complain about the song Never Before on Machine Head. I think this is just as bad. I think both of those songs are just underwritten. They're both lacking in imagination. And so, yeah, those came up a little bit in the comments, but, you know, I fight with a few people about those ones sometimes as well, but there's no way neither of those was going to make it either.
Ian's voice though. Come on.
The voice is on all these other ones too, right?
He can almost sing to me. He can almost sing anything. He could sing off a cereal box and it would sound good, right? Yeah. That's kind of how I feel about him.
Yeah.
And I got the impression from this list that you favored David Coverdale.
Yeah, no, I wouldn't say so. I'm just looking at the list here as well. So, you know, starting at the beginning, we do have Love Child in at number 19. We have Sail Away at 17. Sail Away, a lot of people really like Sail Away, so we got a lot for that. Coming Home at 16. But then, you know, well, yeah, Lay Down, Stay Down is in here. I guess there's a fair bit. Lady Double Dealer, yeah, you're right. But then a whole bunch of Ian Gillan ones all the way up to Stormbringer at number 4. And then Burn at number 1. Now, Burn at number 1, I've noticed through all the comments, I think most people agree that the best Deep Purple song is either Burn or Child in Time. And they are from two different eras, but Burn has just got so much firepower. It's hard to deny, even though it is David Coverdale and Glenn Hughes, but it's got an amazing riff. It's from a well-liked album. It's got amazing drumming. It's got all those spaces for the drums. And it's got these two vocalists just coming in like blaze, all guns blazing, doing this duet thing. So it's one that everybody loves. Nobody would complain about that. They complained about my number two. That's for sure. Pictures of Home.
Do you think that the Mach 3 is the least favorite era?
Oh, definitely not. You know, there's some other mocks that are way well, actually, you know what? It's probably the second favorite if you think about it, because it would go Mark II for sure, right? And that's been around twice, right? But we got to remember there's a Tommy Bolin in there, so there's a 4. So that's lesser than Mark III. And then a lot of people don't like the very first version either. I'm not a big fan at all. In fact, I was just thinking before we jumped on here, if this was a list of 60s and 70s, I wouldn't have a single 60s song on here. I really do not like Mark 1.
Do you think Mark 1 was too... well, you called the chorus in Smoke on the Water, I think you said you called it frumpy. Do you think...
The verses are frumpy. The verse,
okay. Do you think Mark 1 was like that? Just too...
Yeah, Mark 1 is... Oh, man. How do you describe it? It's almost like a depressing psych, right? It's very related to what Vanilla Fudge did, right?
Organs. It speaks for its time, right? It speaks for its time.
True, but it's, you know, long jammy things, a lot of covers too. I don't want to hear covers from people. But back to your earlier question, I mean, if you think about it, there's a Mark with Jolynn Turner.
Yes.
There's Don Airey in the band versus John Lord, so that's a bit of a split. There's Richie, actually, yeah, that's right. Mark 2 comes back twice. So that because you got the Battle Rages On album as well. So, you know, and there's a lot of people who have never really got on with the whole Steve Morse era at all. Right. So, no, I would say the band that made Burn and Stormbringer is probably the second most, appreciated.
I don't know why I brought that up. I think I'm too, my listening tastes are a lot of times they stay in the 70s. And I remember what a disappointment it was for fans, when Ian left. I don't know. That's why I kind of bring it up. But right.
It's absolutely true. There was a huge disappointment. But Burn is really rising in people's estimation of favorite Deep Purple album. Not so much Stormbringer, but you're right. Yeah.
So I was surprised. I know this song is overplayed, but Smoke on the Water... I love the song still. I can never tire of it. Mm-hmm. I just think that I bet you a lot of people, especially the mainstream reader, would expect that to be number one. But this is, as you put it, this is through your lens. So it came in at 12, not even in the top 10. So I find it interesting what you say about it. You said here's a bone thrown.
Yeah. Yeah.
Smoke on the Water, you called, has to the frumpy verse. But it does have the most iconic riff. I mean, this is a riff that, you know, every kid learns, a lot of kids learn guitar by playing this riff because I wouldn't call it simple, but it's sort of easy to learn. It's just a great riff. Right. I never tire of it. And I just love the song all around. I mean, when you first heard this, come on. I mean, maybe you tire of it now, but anyone who first hears the song has got to be like, wow, this is such a great tune.
Yeah, it's absolutely immediate. And that riff is completely iconic. But over the years, you know, it's a little bit like my I get a lot of heck for complaining about Stairway to Heaven as well. Right. But
yeah,
over the years, you know, you get to some of the comments backed me up on this one. You get past that riff into the verse and it's y'all game dev or mantra. And then, you know, the guitar is just going chicka, 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 chicka. And, you know, then the organ's not very great. And the vocal melody is kind of a little annoying. So I don't think they do a great job of the verse. But when you get to the chorus is pretty cool too. And that's you know, it's more about vocals at the chorus, but you do hear another cool riff behind it. So there's another kind of doomy thing going on in the chorus. So, and you know, I don't know, the story over the years has not been the greatest, you know, I don't think that the lining up of those particular lyrics are that great, but yeah, it's funny. You could almost do a whole episode on these songs where you forget most of the song because one part of it is so amazing. And that riff is just so, you know, just hits you right between the eyes.
That's a hint for another top 20 list, overplayed songs. It's just like Stairway to Heaven. That lead, instead, that guitar lead by Jimmy Page is probably one of the best. But it's overlooked because people have heard that song so many times.
Interesting. Yeah,
But I like what you said about Smoke on Water. This is great. It's like a Foreigner song from Double Vision.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
It's like one of those Columbia House albums you get. for those who remember the Columbia House deal, and you get in the mail and it's just like, you know, it's just a good song. What a great riff. Foreigner was like that. So yeah, I could see it in that. I could definitely see. Is there one other complaint that you got? Like, why was this song included?
Well, yeah. So I did get a lot of complaints for putting pictures of homes so high. Like I was trying to be contrarian or something. But that is just a gorgeous, cool, dark, interesting chord sequence. Great John Lord stuff in there. It's on Machine Head, and I think it competes with the likes of Highway Star and Space Truckin' perfectly fine. I just love it. It's a little bit of an obscure one to put so high. So I definitely got abuse for that. Yeah, I would say after Burn and Child in Time, most people would pick Highway Star pretty darn high too, and Smoke on the Water and Speed King, which I had high. I had Stormbringer high as well. But, you know, I put the two heaviest songs on here from Stormbringer, which is the other one being Lady Double Dealer. And I can understand people thinking that that's a little, you know, not that great a song, but it's a good heavy up-tempo one. Sounds like a Whitesnake song, right? But yeah, the rest of this, I think, went over okay. Mary Long, that's right. So I knew I'd get abuse from my good buddy Monty Connor for that one. A lot of people don't like Mary Long, and that was a
Monty's
big.
He's got good taste.
Yeah. But we actually did a Dark Horse panel for our video show, The Contrarians, recently on Who Do We Think We Are. You know, five guys talking about that album for an hour, right? You know, a lot of people are down on that album, but I think Mary Long is a good solid song from that. I think it's a good heavy rocker. It's got a good story. It's about censorship on British TV. So yeah, and there's other ones on there that people brought up, Place in Line, Rat Bat Blues. So in the comments, there's a lot of good stuff for that. You know, I keep forgetting, Pat, that whole Deep Purple Mark II thing was over by 1973. I keep forgetting how darn long ago that is, right?
I know. That is, that's hard to think about.
Yeah.
15 years.
Yeah.
I got to ask you though, and this is, I think, a good question. Don't you think this list changes significantly if you were to do a list of the top 20 Deep Purple songs live? And you can even say just in the 70s.
Wow. That's a deep question. Wow. Live. So,
because the songs change so much live, right?
Okay. But here's what happens. So here's the thing. So when you get into the, David Coverdale, John, Glenn Hughes era, you've got more drugs and more looseless and the band not getting along and Richie being cranky. So maybe everything live, you know, except from the very beginning where it's a little still exciting with Burn. Certainly when you get to the Tommy Bolin album, Come Taste the Band, there's a lot of drugs and problems in the band. The band's really falling apart. So nothing up there is probably very good live, right? So live, you know, most people would point to whatever makes up the Made in Japan album. That's a whole nother argument I get into all the time. People think that's the greatest live album of all time. And I think it's boring. Cause I just want to hear the songs faster. You know, I don't want to hear jamming, right? And I get complaints about that too. It's like I people shot back, and you know, when I said, well, if Child in Time is your favorite Deep Purple song, maybe you're not a Deep Purple fan. And you know, people shot back validly saying, well, if you don't like jammy Deep Purple and improvisation, maybe you're not a Deep Purple fan. It's like, fair point, I guess. Because I don't want to hear 10, 15, 20 minute versions of any of their songs, right? But yeah, so maybe live, to answer your question, would be at the height of their powers, maybe 1972, right? When they did do Made in Japan. And then, yeah, you'd have to bring into the whole philosophy of what do you think about jamming and improvisation, right? So my favorite Deep Purple, I remember we were arguing about this one day, and I made up my version of Made in Japan, and it was like Smoke on the Water, edit. Everything had edit in brackets after it, right? So I was coming up with this 9-track album that's a single album, right?
But now, so that's a future list. That's a future top 20. I don't know if you would enjoy doing that. But that's a future one. And, you know, if you had to compare the different decades, wow, that would really be mind blowing because you have to include Morse in there, which, you know, he's, let's face it, he's not Richie. but he's just as good, I think. And I think, man, I think he's a pleasure to listen to.
Yeah, and so much variety and so many cool things he does. And he has as much of his own voice as Richie has. It's a completely different voice. But I think he has more versatility than Richie had, too. I think he does more things.
He played in Kansas, too.
Yeah, Dixie Dregs. Yeah. Solo albums, flies a plane.
Dixie Dregs, yeah. He's so good. And unfortunately, you know, you're going to have listeners that no one can replace Blackmore, right? They're just Blackmore centric, and Blackmore himself is Blackmore centric, so God only knows what he thinks of Morris.
Blackmore fired himself from Hard Rock, right? You know, he basically quit the whole thing, right? Eventually.
Do you like his new thing real quick?
I don't know. I have a hard time with it. I'm kind of into it, but then I kind of have a hard time as seeing it as legitimate Renaissance music, right? There's just something about it that seems strange. Well,
his wife's voice is beautiful.
Yeah.
He's always good no matter what he does.
Yeah.
But if you watch their concerts, they're very loose, meaning it's improvised and they have people come on stage. And
that's cool.
Sometimes, you know, Richie will go off into... You know, like he'll just go into Smoke on the Water and then drop it and then go into a medieval song. It's kind of like a backyard party atmosphere. Like something, remember when you first started drinking and there was a kegger and you would go to, so there'd be a band playing. That sort of atmosphere, which I guess would be great, is fun, but it's Richie Blackmore.
Yeah.
You know?
I'm
used to seeing this guy on stage in arenas and you know, throwing his guitar up in the air with smoke all around, you know. It's weird.
You know, to be fair to Richie too, I mean, he really did evolve. When you get to the Joe Lynn Turner version of Rainbow, he was really a pretty different cat by that point. And it was tasteful and restrained and different. So he really does have a lot of versatility if you think about it. He loved bringing in the keyboards and what Joe did and the spaces in the songs. I really like, my favorite of all of those is Bent Out of Shape, the last one they did. And I think he was really on to something by that point, where there was a new kind of exciting Rainbow sound. But of course, then it's back to Deep Purple Mark II with Perfect Strangers at that point, right?
Right. Well, thank you for coming on the podcast. And you say you don't like covers, right? Deep Purple doing covers. I guess you didn't like their last album, and hopefully it won't be their last, because you would hate to think that Deep Purple goes out with a covers album.
Yeah, I mean, it looks like they'll keep going. They don't seem to have any reason to stop. I mean, you know, people are complaining a bit. Ian's starting to lose his voice more and more all the time. But they love being creatives. That's the really cool thing about them. They're a creative band, and they made a lot of records with Steve. Unfortunately, Steve won't be in the band because he's off taking care of his ailing wife, right? So they do have a new guitarist. So maybe there's an exciting new era for the band.
How is the new guitarist? Have you heard his stuff?
No, I've just some live stuff. So yeah, he's fine. He's cool. So yeah, maybe that'll bring a new, you know, a fresh, I mean, the albums are all pretty highly regarded, but I mean, that'll bring a fresh new look to things because guitar is so important to that band.
All right, listeners, if you get a chance, go to Martin's podcast. He puts mine to shame. He does it weekly, right?
Absolutely. Yeah.
And go to goldminemag.com and check out Martin's top 20 Deep Purple songs from the 1970s. And it's ranked. So we told you what number one was, but there are 19 other songs to debate Martin about. He checks the comments, everyone. So, all right. Thank you, Martin. It's always a pleasure.
Back. All right. Chat soon.
And hopefully we'll be back talking about Deep Purple Live. After you do a top 20 about the live Deep Purple songs, which be probably a hard assignment for you, it sounds like. Okay, great. Thanks.
See ya.
All right, listeners, don't forget to go to goldminemag.com to check out exclusive content and get the issue, the print issue. We're bi-monthly now, but you can go to Barnes & Noble, Books a Million, or go to shop.goldminemag.com and pick it up. Mail order it. All right. We'll see you next time on the Goldmine Podcast.
Hey, this is Liberty DeVito.
This is Mike Del Judas.
This is Michael Cavanaugh from Broadway's Moving Out.
This is John Jackson, director of the Billy Joel Archive.
This is Russell Javers.
This is Richie Cannata, and you're listening to Glass Houses, a Billy Joel podcast. It's awesome.
I'm Michael Grosvenor.
And I'm Jack Fernino.
We're lifelong Billy Joel fans who launched a podcast in 2020 celebrating the music we love.
Whether you're looking for the greatest hits or the B-sides and rarities, you'll find it all here. And if you've ever wondered what happens behind the scenes of a concert or recording session, we've got you covered.
Join us as we explore albums, tours, band members, the latest news, and more. You'll also get a unique glimpse into the music industry straight from the musicians and other professionals who help make it all happen.
Tune into Glass Houses, a Billy Joel podcast, at glasshousespod.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
Glass Houses, a Billy Joel podcast, is a proud member of the Pantheon Podcasts Network.